Good to see everybody here this morning. Hope you've had a good week this past week. I do want to make one adjustment to the announcements. We have several that weren't able to be here this morning, and I think maybe we'll hold off on our teachers' meeting until 2 weeks from this morning, not during the Thanksgiving weekend, but the week after that. So be thinking about though and that and praying about it as well. We definitely need every person who can and is willing to teach or even to help teach within our Bible classes. And so be sure and be praying about that. And we have appreciated so much all that y'all have done through the years and encourage you to continue to help in that area. But let's meet 2 weeks on the morning service from today, right after services, and we'll get our teacher schedule filled. Now, if you're not going to be here at that time and you'd like to go ahead and sign up for one, just let me know and we'll put you down in case you've got vacation plans for 2 weeks from now. Again, good to see everybody this morning. I wanted to talk about something that I believe is of a critical nature, and it's also of a common nature, and it's just this. There are times that things happen within our life that we wonder if God is even caring that it's happening to us or that we're going through something. And I'd like to point out that was a common feeling throughout time, but it was especially common among the disciples. If you'd like to turn over to Mark chapter 4 and verse 35, we'll read a familiar passage. But there are some things in there that I think are really important for us to think about. It's important for me to think about, and maybe it'll be important for you as well as we go through it. In Mark chapter 4, verse 35, it said, that day when evening came, he said to his disciples, "Let's go over to the other side." Leaving the crowd behind, they took him along just as he was in the boat. There were also other boats with them. A furious squall came up, and waves broke over the boat so that it was nearly swamped. Jesus was in the stern, sleeping on a cushion. The disciples woke him and said to him, "Teacher, don't you care if we drown?" He got up, rebuked the wind, and said to the waves, "Quiet, be still." Then the wind died down, and it was completely calm. He said to his disciples, "Why are you so afraid? Do you still have no faith?" They were terrified and asked each other, "Who is this? Even the wind and the waves obey him." Now, I do want to point this out. At this point in time, the disciples were already starting to suspect that Jesus was the Son of God. But they didn't know for sure. And he hadn't told them for sure. And so there are still things that happen on a daily basis that would surprise them sometimes. And this was one of them. But isn't it interesting? This is not a small thing that's happening, this storm that came up. There's at least four professional fishermen with them. Four men who have spent their lives on ships, probably on this lake, or on boats on this lake, or a lake very similar to it. And so they know the difference between a little squall that everybody else kind of gets nervous about and then kind of laugh at, "Oh, it's nothing," and something that scares them to the point of they think they're about to die. You ever thought you were about to die? Or had something really bad happen to you where you wondered what was going to happen and you wondered maybe, does God care? I just talked with a friend this past week. I see him probably about once or twice a year is all, but I was asking how things were going, and he said, "This was the toughest 2 years of my life." And I asked him why, because I knew that he had been married about 3 years ago and knew that they had a child. And he said, "Well, our son was born with a chromosome deficiency." And he said, It's a rare disease, but it causes him not to be able to develop like other kids. He said, over half of the kids that get this never speak. And he said, most of the ones that get it never start walking until they're about 4 years old, and some as late as 9 years old, if they walk. And so they have been dealing with that, he and his wife. By the way, the little boy's name is Sagan, if you want to remember him in your prayers. But he was just talking about how difficult that was. And I know he's a person of faith, and so he wasn't complaining about it. He was just talking about how difficult it is. But have you ever been through something like that, where either you or a family member or somebody that you really love is going through something that is really, really hard, to the point you wonder, does God even care? Is he even paying attention to this? Well, the disciples had to wake Jesus up. That tells you something right there, as far as the things that are a huge storm in our lives are peaceful enough for them to have rest. They had to wake him up. But the first thing they said is, don't you care? And of course, Jesus did care, and Jesus immediately took care of the storm for them. Now, there's going to be storms in your life that just seem like they'll go on for forever. And maybe you have experienced that, to where you've had something that you've struggled with for years. And even though you know that God does care, sometimes you still wonder if he's paying attention and if he really knows what you're going through. But notice what Jesus said to his disciples. He said, why are you so afraid? Do you still have no faith? Now, I'm not sure that he was necessarily criticizing them here. He may have been. But we're told he rebuked the waves and the wind, and it obeyed him. It doesn't say he rebuked the apostles, the disciples. But it does show the two questions he asked them. After they said, don't you care? He said, why are you so afraid? And then he said, do you still have no faith? Carolyn has written a children's, well, it's not really a children's study book, but it's geared towards children. But it's on this very passage and ones that follow it. And she was talking about how interesting it is that after he asked them, do you still have no faith? They immediately landed at the Gennesaret, and he healed the man with the multiple evil spirits. And then he healed the woman who had been sick for so many years. And then he raised Jairus' daughter back to life. And so he didn't just say, do you still have no faith? He then gave them something to have faith by: calming the storm, driving out the evil demons, healing the woman, raising the girl from the dead. He doesn't just ask us questions and then just get after us, because he does care for us. He gives us tremendous proof of his power and of his care. But we have to be attentive to that. And if we're not attentive to that, we're going to miss out. And by the way, as you look at those three instances that we talked about, the demon-possessed man and the woman who was ill and the daughter, the parent, the father of the daughter who had died, they all came to Jesus. He's not going to insinuate himself in your life. If you decide, I can do this without God and I can do this without Christ, and you just want to rail against them, you feel free. God will let you do that. There's a penalty for that, not just in the eternity, but then you don't get the peace. You don't get the storms calmed. Even if you're going through something difficult, Jesus can calm the storm. There is a peace that passes all understanding that's really real. And sometimes it's hard to fathom it, because it does pass all understanding. But you know, some of y'all have been through that, and you know, I don't know why I have a peace, but I do. Well, really, we do know why. But again, this question, don't you care? In Psalms chapter 55, we read about David, and it's an interesting passage, because it really addresses this idea of God caring for us and our part, so that we can take advantage of how much he cares for us. But in Psalms chapter 55, in verse 22, it says this: cast your cares on the Lord, and he will sustain you. I don't know about you, but I like that. You know, if you had a snake crawling on you, what are you going to do? You're going to get rid of it. You're going to cast it off of you. We have cares. Now, I realize we're not we're not casting snakes upon God, but we can cast our cares upon Him. We can transfer them from us to Him, and He's able to handle them. The apostles transferred their cares, their fear of dying, to Jesus' care, and Jesus immediately took care of it. And David is saying, cast your cares on the Lord and He will sustain you. I want to remind you what David has gone through and what David will be through later on. David has had a lion and a bear that have attacked the sheep, at least one, and he's gone after both of them and killed them. He has stood up before Goliath, or is about to. I'm not sure exactly I think this is right after he has faced Goliath. He's also going to be running from Saul. And so he's got a lot that if he wanted to complain about, he could complain about it. He could say to God, don't you care? But instead he said, cast your cares on the Lord and He will sustain you. And then notice this, because this is one of the greatest promises in all of Scripture. He will never let the righteous fall. Now you can go down into the pit on your own if you want to, but He will not let you fall. And that's a tremendous promise. That's a guarantee. That means that no matter what the storms of life that hit you, no matter how severe they are, you won't ever fall. If you're righteous, that means you have to do something too. God will always do His part. But will we? Cast your cares on the Lord. He will sustain you. He will never let you fall. But you, O God, bring down the wicked into the pit of corruption. Again, you want to go down into the pit, He'll help you there because you're not being righteous. And then it says this, bloodthirsty and deceitful men will not live out half of their days. But as for me, I trust in you. And then look at chapter 56. After you've seen that part, trusting in God, it then says this in 56 chapter 1. And as you're getting into chapter 1, look at the notation. It's for the director of music to the tune of a dove on distant oaks of David, a miktam, whatever that is, when the Philistines had seized him in Gath. Think about that for a moment. Just about a year or two earlier, he had fought and defeated Goliath. You know where Goliath was from? He was from Gath. He was a Philistine from Gath. And now David is fleeing from Saul. Not because he's been disloyal to Saul, but Saul is jealous of David, and Saul is worried that somehow David will be a threat to his kingdom, and so he's trying to kill him. And so David has to flee to the very hometown of Goliath, who he just killed a year or two earlier. And he's before the king of Gath there. And if you'll recall from that account, when they brought David into the king's household, and you can imagine the joy they had. You know how it is when you can beat a really good team that really beat you earlier, and now you have a chance to repay the favor? How exciting that is. Well, their football games were war, and winning or losing was life or death. And David had won. He had beaten their, whoever you want to put it, fill the blank in with. He had beaten their Michael Jordan, killed him. And now he's brought into the house of the king. And so what does David do? He acts like he's mad. He starts scratching the posts and drooling down on his beard. And he fakes them out. The king says, don't I have enough mad men in it? So he had him get out of the house. And when David got out of the house, he fled. But this is what's going on right here. When the Philistines had seized him at Gath, that's the occasion. And he says this, be merciful to me, O God, for men hotly pursue me. He had enemies on his back, and had run smack dab into other enemies. Be merciful to me, O God, for men hotly pursue me. All day long they press their attack. My slanderers pursue me all day long. Many are attacking me in their pride. When I am afraid, I will trust in you. And then he says this, in God whose word I praise, in God I trust, I will not be afraid. Now, you may have thought that that phrase, in God I trust, came from our coinage. But there's a reason they stuck it on there. And by the way, do you know when they stuck that on there, in God we trust? It was in 1864. It was right at the end of the Civil War when they were all so wore out. Both sides were just as poor as could be. They had spent their wealth. They had spent their blood. And they're still fighting amongst each other. And they came up with the idea that instead of trusting in their own might and in their own money, that they should trust in God. And so they literally put it on their coinage at that time to show that they really did trust in God. Now, not everybody did, but that was the motive of the nation that did that. In God we trust. Well, that came from David. David said, in God whose word I praise, in God I trust, I will not be afraid. Now think about that. We've all heard of vicious circles, have we not? You need money to pay your credit card bill, and yet you don't have enough money because you have credit card bills, so you borrow more money so you can pay your credit card bill, and now you owe more money and you have to pay your credit card bill, and you have that credit card bill because you owed money, and you just, there's no end. If you don't get off of this roller coaster, you just go in this vicious circle. Well, here is a virtuous circle. He says, when I am afraid, I will trust in you. And then he says, in God I trust, I will not be afraid. You know how you get rid of fear? It's with this virtuous circle. When I'm afraid, I'm going to trust in God. Do you need more money? Are you burdened with that? Have you been burdened with your health? Have you been burdened with somebody in your family or friends letting you down? What is it that you're burdened with right now? What is it that you fear the most? Because David, who was being pursued by a king who wanted to kill him, and he ran right into the hands of another king whose champion he had killed, and who would have, if he'd thought about it, probably would have killed him. He goes to God and says, when I'm afraid, I'll trust in you. And then he says, in God I trust, I will not be afraid. That's a virtuous circle. It's something that we start with fear, but then we lose our fear forever as long as we trust in God. We get rid of it by trusting in God, and it never comes back if we trust in God. It's a wonderful thing. You still will go through difficult times. There will still be storms in life that will just scare you to death. There will be things that bring you to your knees as far as grief and as far as emotional pain of watching a loved one go through something. And there will be times where you'll experience physical pain and physical difficulties. But if in God you trust, you don't have to be afraid. And he says, why? What can mortal man do to me? See, we're always afraid of mortal man doing something to us. I promised Brad. Well, I didn't promise him, but I told him I would try and help him out. He sat down on these cushions and he said, you better have some funny jokes today, boy, because these are comfortable. So we're always worried about the government on one side or the other. Doesn't matter where you are. We're always worried about the government doing something, are we not? Well, you may have heard the definition of politics. But it's a twofold word. Poly is from the Latin, meaning many or multiple, and tix from the English, meaning blood-sucking parasites. So we're kind of afraid sometimes of what these blood-sucking parasites might do to us, and we allow them to ruin our lives. Why do we do that? They're not in our households. Oh, I know. I hear people, well, they're watching you all the time. Fine. I'll preach to them. But the point is, I realize that there can be some serious things that happen to us. David was really being chased by King Saul, who really wanted to kill him. He had come into the camp of the Philistines, who he had fought just a year or two earlier. And again, if they'd really been thinking clearly, they'd have killed him. And so he has reason for fear, and yet he says, I trust in God, so I won't be afraid. You ever seen that bumper sticker that says no fear? Most of the people that have that, I think, need a bumper sticker that says no brains. But if you put no fear except for God, I think you'd be on the right track, because we are commanded to fear God. But if we fear God, then we don't have to fear anyone else. And that fear of God, by the way, is more than being terrified of Him. It's respect. It's love. It is an honoring of His holiness. This is the type of fear we have. But if we have that type of fear, and we're in a covenant relationship with God, then God will take care of everything else. There will be times where we'll be tempted to go to God and ask Him, "Don't you care if we drown?" And God's response to the righteous will always be, "I will never let you fall." It's a tremendous thing. The only question is it in God we trust? Or is it in our own thoughts and capabilities? Because if we're just relying on ourselves, we're not going to make it. We have to do everything we can, 100%. But we rely on God first, and we rely on God last. And if in God we trust, we don't have to be afraid. He will take care of the storms of life. One of the things, let me leave you with this. One of the things I was talking about with the folks I was visiting with when I found out about the young man's son, I said, you know, as difficult as this is, isn't it nice to know that in the big picture, that this little one is going to be in heaven someday? Because of the disease it has, it will never reach the age of accountability. It can't. And therefore, it never have any sin. It gives the parents something to work for, because they know, here, I've got a baby in heaven, or I've got a son in heaven. I've got this one, and I want to visit with him, and I want to have a relationship with him. I think God will allow us to do that. Do you remember what Peter and Andrew and James noticed when they witnessed Jesus with Moses and Elijah? They noticed that it was Moses and Elijah. They knew who they were, even though they'd been dead for hundreds of years. We'll know who we are, I believe, in heaven. Maybe we won't, but I believe we will. And I'm looking forward to these reunions. And one of the things that I love about God is, even though He does permit us to test from time to time, He will not let us fall if we trust in Him. And in the big picture, what are the first 1,000 years of eternity not going to take care of for the difficulty you're suffering now, if you're with God? So I ask you this: are you with God? Have you become a Christian? Have you really believed the Word, confessed you believe Jesus is Lord, really repented of your sins, and really been baptized for the forgiveness of your sins? And if you've done that, are you walking in the light? Because if you've done those things and you're walking in the light, then you have a reason to trust in God. But if you haven't, while you can trust that God will be faithful, you have to do your part. And so let me encourage you, if you haven't taken care of those things yet, do your part today. If you're ready to be baptized, we'll help you with that this morning. If you've had trouble walking in the light and you'd like the prayers of the congregation, we can help you with that this morning. But if you have any needs, won't you come while we stand and sing?